What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 273 on this Memorial Day, Monday, May 25th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green with you. Wow, a shocker over the weekend in Norman. OU softball done. They're not going to Oklahoma City for the first time in over a decade. Tom and I were at all three games at Loves Field. What happened? Where does OU go from here? We're going to get into all of it on the show today. NCAA baseball tournament set to start later this week. OU got their draw. Not super friendly. I have some thoughts there. We'll get that out there. And we're going to talk a little golf on a Monday for the first time ever as well. Big, big news from OU golf over the weekend as well that we'll touch on the back end. We're versatile here at Sooners Illustrated. We're jumping all over the place on a Memorial Day Monday. Before we get started, remember you can subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use that promo code on your screen on YouTube. If you're listening on podcast, Sooners Pod 60, all one word. That gets you a 60% discount to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Take advantage. Be with us at Sooners Illustrated. All right, let's get into it, Tom. First off, you know, hopefully everyone enjoying the holiday weekend, spending their time with loved ones, enjoying the day off today for the, you know, the more normal jobs. Tom and I, not off at all. We're here. We're thrilled to hopefully entertain the masses for a little bit. Softball is where we're going to obviously start and will be the bulk of the show today. Tom, I mean, we talked about it last weekend. It's just funny how quickly this stuff, and just shows how unpredictable this stuff is, because, you know, last Monday coming off the regional when we did the show, we were the conversation then was, man, they completely dominated the regional. They pitched incredibly well. They barely had to use Audrey Lowry. They're as set up as they could possibly be. There even was an upset, so they have an unseeded team coming to Norman. I mean, in no world did I personally ever think Oklahoma was not going to win this series. And they do. Mississippi State gets them in three games. They beat them on Friday. OU did bounce back on Saturday and then just thumped them yesterday. 6-0. Offense couldn't do anything. There's a lot to digest, a lot of things we can touch on here. But, Tom, I'll just throw this out to you to start with. At what point did you seriously think they were in deep trouble this weekend? Because even after they lost Friday, I still thought they'll win the next two, and they dominated Saturday. But yesterday they fell behind early and just never got anything going. And you look up and they're out. It's really shocking, honestly.
I probably had an inkling of concern on Friday, actually.
Sure.
When Audrey Lowry didn't start the opener.
Yeah.
I'm not one to, you know, question Patty Gasso. You know, she's Same. You know, there's nobody better than her in the sport. But I was a little confused about Audrey Lowry not starting and them opting instead for Miley Guchenyo to start in that game. You know, obviously it wasn't just the pitching that let them down on Friday. It was the fielding too. But then Audrey Lowry comes out on Saturday and just dominates really,
yeah.
With their season on the line. I would have figured that Audrey Lowry would have started the opener, and then you would have had her fresh for a game three if necessary, or bring her out of the bullpen in game two. But you look throughout the season, like, Audrey Lowry has been their best pitcher, but I think she's been in her best when she's been starting. And she struggled at times coming out of the bullpen. And look, it's something that you see a lot of pitchers struggle with, both in baseball and softball. Like, starting a game is a lot different than coming out of the bullpen. And, you know, some pitchers are just built to be starters and they don't respond as well out of the bullpen. I know Audrey has had a handful of games where she's come in and gotten a save or, you know, helped close things down. But I just think she's so much more effective out of the as a starter. And I think there was a missed opportunity there to really come out and set the tone against Mississippi State. And after Friday, the way, you know, Mississippi State, you know, strung together 15 hits against that pitching staff, you know, Oklahoma committed four errors. They got 11 runs off those hits and errors. And it just felt like it gave Mississippi State a little bit more hope and a little bit more momentum, even after Oklahoma came back and answered on Saturday in a big way. You know, I don't think either of us thought, like you said, going into this weekend that Oklahoma was really at risk of not making it back to Oklahoma City. This is a team that had not lost a weekend series all year, certainly not at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, Patty talked about it yesterday. It's like, you know, you won the SEC regular season, you won every weekend series in SEC play, and you have a super regional at home against SEC team, and you're treating it like that, and you think that that gives you an advantage. And, you know, I was interested to see how this lineup was going to fare against Mississippi State's pitching staff, but I thought that Oklahoma would have the edge in that, even with as good as Mississippi State's pitchers have been this season. But ultimately, like, Oklahoma just ran out of gas offensively, and their pitching, which had been kind of an Achilles heel all season, you know, we talked about it. It was a concern about whether this pitching was good enough to get them to compete for a national championship again. And we thought, you know, maybe they got a little bit of momentum coming out of the regional, and they just didn't have enough in the tank to get back to Oklahoma City.
First time missing the WCWS since 2015.
We weren't even at OU yet.
Unreal. I graduated from college a long time ago, and I hadn't even started yet. Whenever the last time they hadn't made it. I mean, it's nuts. It's an unbelievable streak to make it every year since then, COVID season notwithstanding, which they probably would have made it that season, obviously. It's nuts to go that long, but then it just shows how unusual this is. And they don't even lose super regional games, let alone the series. Right. It had been over a decade in that as well. I mean, it's crazy, and I'm with you. I feel silly questioning Patty Gasso or Jen Rocha, just how accomplished they are and how much they've won all the national titles. I'm yet to really get anyone explain to me why it made sense to not throw Audrey Lowry in game one. I don't understand it, because we've talked about it all season. By far your best pitcher, by far. Right? I mean, it's not like you have a clear number two. Like, I get playing matchups and stuff, but when you clearly have an ace and a best arm, why not throw her in the first game? You win, presumably, and then you can rest her in the middle game. And then if you lose, she's ready to go in the third game. I mean, that seems so odd. Maybe that's way too simplistic on my thought process. And I'm sure a lot more goes into it than just that. But that decision ended up really burning them and hurting them a lot, because obviously they were already behind. And like you said, she's not the same in a relief role. She was great on Saturday, and by the time she came in on Sunday, it didn't matter. And they didn't score on Sunday either, which obviously is the other big part of this offense, which was historically good. All these home runs. You know, we talked about last week, and Kendall Wells was still in a funk. She broke out of that. I mean, she had two home runs this weekend. Like, you thought going into Sunday, like, the offense was starting to roll again, and they just did nothing on Sunday. And they fell behind early, which I've always talked about this forever in baseball and softball. You always want to be the home team. It's a huge benefit to have, just removing like the home crowd, but like to bat in the bottom of an inning. It's a huge benefit. You want to bat last. You want to always know you can have a chance at the end. The one part where it's not a benefit is if you fall behind before you even swung. That's the one spot, and that's what happened. Mississippi State jumped up, and you felt like OU got tight from the very beginning. And Patty talked about it postgame. Like, they just never got anything to, like, feel like they had some momentum. Like, they just – I mean, they didn't score in the game, obviously. I mean, they just – it's just shocking to see that happen to Oklahoma, because it just never does. They always have a way to swing things back in their favor. And it just seemed like this team, as good as it was, as much offensive firepower as they had over the course of the year, they just never seemed to have like those batters that you just felt like they're going to come through. Like, they just, those veteran, have been there, done that. They're just kind of missing that on this year's team. And it caught up to them, obviously, yesterday, because they just – I just see, you know, your offense shut down like that was stunning, really. I mean, you don't see it.
Yeah, it looked like they were just kind of taking fielding practice batting practice for Mississippi State to field. It was just fly ball after fly ball. You know, they had a couple that, you know, you thought might get lifted out there, but it was, I think there was a streak at one point of like 9 or 11 consecutive fly ball outs. You know, they were only 0-4, I think, with runners in scoring position. So they didn't even have a lot of opportunities to kind of manufacture runs. And, you know, Patty talked about it. It's like, at some point, like, you just need to be able to, you know, move runners over. And, you know, they didn't have many runners to begin with. And, you know, a lot of that is a credit to Delaney Everett, who, you know, hats off to her, had not started a game all season.
It's crazy.
Pitched only 13 and a third innings, hadn't had an outing longer than 3 innings. And she goes out there and throws a complete game, 3-hit shutout against one of the most prolific offenses in NCAA history to punch Mississippi State's ticket to the Women's College World Series for the first time ever. I mean, that is like a storybook performance right there.
Yeah.
And it was on her parents' wedding anniversary after her dad had passed away last year. It's like you can't make that kind of thing up. Like it was just an absurd performance from her. And it wasn't even like she was, you know, racking up strikeouts or just like, you know, mowing through the order. She was just getting efficient outs. And Oklahoma just couldn't string together any sort of offense. And it just felt like they were pressing for a lot of the game and just settling for, you know, these fly balls that they just couldn't get to drop anywhere.
No, that was the first – whenever I got to the press box yesterday and I look at the lineups and I did a double take of, hold on, this pitcher from Mississippi State has 13 innings this year, doesn't have a start. Yeah. What a bold decision by Coach Ricketts. And it was spectacular. I mean, she was incredible. And, you know, she has the unfortunate play where she hits Kendall Wells in the face with the ball. And the crowd is on her. And, you know, that's a spot that can easily rattle a pitcher who has not thrown a lot. And if anything, she got better after that. Like, it just, yeah, I don't know. And Patty Gasser talked about it, like, guilty of some overswinging that results in a lot of those pop-ups, you know, just kind of getting under the ball, trying to hit homers all the time, which they did all year. But it just, they didn't have it yesterday. And so just stunning. It was a stunning day. And honestly, for me, I really wasn't worried when they lost on Friday. I thought they'll win the next two. They dominate Saturday. You're thinking they're going to come back Sunday. And I still, when it was even 4-0, you're kind of thinking like, all right, there's some trouble here, but you still expect them to make a run and then get into the game. And then Mississippi State pushes it out to 6, and it's just kind of like, this might not happen. And then it never did. And it's still kind of crazy sitting here on Monday. Like, the WCWS starts on Thursday, and Oklahoma's not in it. Like, it just – it's odd. It's going to be very, very foreign. And Oklahoma State didn't make it either. And so there's no Oklahoma schools in it, which is very uncommon, obviously. And so it's going to be weird to see that event this week without OU in it. And just a shocking end of the year, obviously. Tough weekend. Anything else stuck out to you from the weekend before we go big picture?
Yeah, I think after Friday's game, I think we were talking about it in the press box afterward, but it's like, either this team's going to come out and dominate on Saturday and like respond, or they're just going to fold it in. And then, you know, they came out and they dominated. They didn't run rule them, but they dominated. And at that point, you're like, okay, they're going to handle business on Sunday. And I was shocked that they just, you know, ran out of gas there. Yeah, it's just strange that they're not going to be in OKC this week.
Very. And like you mentioned earlier, the defense let them down on Friday, which is another thing that's very odd. Takes a lot of pride in defense. I mean, the pitching and the homers are obviously what catches the attention, but Oklahoma has always been really good on defense too. And they just had some shocking lapses that really hurt them on Friday. And the game on Friday too, I should have noted already, they had multiple big leads. They led 5-1, 6-2, 9-6. Like they had that game in hand a few times, and Mississippi State just kept battling back. It's just a stunning weekend. The way it all unfolded was just so foreign. It's not something we've seen in forever. Just really weird. And even today, coming back, like, man, I'm still a little bit in shock, honestly, of what we saw. So,
yeah, I think the two most shocking things Friday were, you know, obviously the four errors, but two of those coming from your pitcher. Chanyo committed two of those in three innings. And then you'd get that 9-6 lead after Kendall Wells' big home run, her second of the day, and you have your best pitcher coming in to close it down, and she gives up 5 runs, 4 unearned, and that's the ball game right there. I think that was just shocking to see from this Oklahoma team at home.
But right. It's going to be interesting to see you know, where they go from here, and that's what I want to ask you. So we'll kind of big picture it. Obviously, when this sort of thing happens, we talk about it all the time, all year. We talk about this team and this program. The bar is astronomically high. It's as high as it could possibly be. It's national championship or bust every single year, literally. And so when you don't even make it to Oklahoma City, obviously now there's going to be a lot of conversation and questions of like, what needs to change, right? Where did they go wrong? What needs to change? I honestly don't think there's anything drastic that needs to happen here. I think, you know, at the end of the day, what it boils down to, we talk about it all year, they didn't have enough pitching. They tried to address that in the portal with Sydney Berzon, who at the time, when we talked about it last, whatever, June, whenever that was last year, was one of the top arms in the portal, if not the top arm, right? And that was like, boom, there's your ace for next year. She didn't pan out. But I mean, by the end of this year, she barely was pitching, right? I mean, she was not really a factor.
I think she never fully recovered from an injury she had before she got to OU, and that kind of derailed the situation there.
Fair enough. But there was a lot of eggs put in that basket, and it didn't end up panning out. Audrey Lowry was awesome. But then after that, you didn't really have anyone that was overly reliable. So the obvious, you would think to me, Tom, would be to go get another big pitcher if you can. Hopefully it pans out this time. What's kind of your you know, 1,000-foot view in Oklahoma and what needs to be kind of the offseason focus, whether it's portal or otherwise?
Yeah, I think the thing with the pitching, it's a peculiar spot because
– they're all back, right?
Look, you're losing two. You're losing Berzon and Kirsten Deal.
Sure.
And you're bringing in three freshmen. So you've already got, you know, assuming everyone returns, that's Audrey Lowry, Molly Guachano, Berkeley Zakay, and Alyssa Parker, plus three incoming freshmen who two of them are top six in the class, and the other one is, I think, top 15 at the position. Are you going to carry more than seven pitchers? Are you going to carry seven pitchers, or are you expecting some further attrition? So that's interesting to me because, look, obviously the glaring hole in this team is an ace. Like, they don't have a Nyjah Kennedy. They don't have a Jordy Fromm. They don't have a, you know, Tegan Kavan. You know, like, they don't have that. And when offenses are as good as they are right now, you need a pitcher that can shut down a team on any given day. So I'm curious to see if that's something they address in the portal because, you know, listening to Patty Gasso after the game, she thinks they have what it takes on that pitching staff. Like, she thinks that staff has the right stuff. And the talent is just a matter of getting the confidence to be able to go out there and, you know, face any given lineup on any given night. And look, I think Audrey Lowry is a really good pitcher. We'll see if, like, what kind of steps she takes from her sophomore to her junior year. Is she still going to be your number one? We'll see. Mm-hmm. I think Alyssa Parker's got some electric stuff that she just needs to kind of harness a little bit. Again, she was a freshman, pitched like 45 innings this year, had her moments where she just looked remarkable. And I think there's something that they can tap into there with Jennifer Rocha, especially, you know, God willing, her health remains in good shape. And, you know, she doesn't miss any further time like she did this season. I think that did hurt the staff, just not having Jen Rocha around for, you know, close to half the season. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. But I think you probably need to explore the idea of adding an ace if someone becomes available in the transfer portal. But other than that, like, I think the biggest priority is making sure that Kendall Wells and Kai Minor are back.
Yeah.
You need to retain those. We talk so much about football and basketball retention and, like, keeping the talent. You know, teams are going to come knocking for Kendall Wells, especially. Like, she's one of the best hitters in the country as a true freshman, just like unreal numbers, finishes with 39 home runs on the year. Like, someone's going to try to lure her into the portal. It feels like I would be shocked if you know, teams didn't express interest there. So you need to retain your talent first of all, but then you look at the lineup and, you know, you have three holes essentially you need to replace. Alana Agbayani's gone, so you need a second baseman. It's like, does Sydney Barker shift over to second base, assuming Nelly Macaron-Marinas is back in time for next season? So she's back at third, and you can move Sydney over to second base. You're losing Abby Dayton in left field. Does Cassidy Pickering take over the corner outfield spot again? Or, you know, do you have another option there? And then first base with Isabella Emmerling graduating too. I think you have a couple options, whether it's Alexi McDaniel or an Alyssa Parker, if you want to get her in the field more on days that she's not pitching. Obviously, I think Alyssa Parker could play second base too as an option. So the depth on this team, they have the pieces to fill some holes. I'm just curious to see kind of, you know, where they go with, you know, filling those needs after losing some graduating seniors.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. Probably a portal bat or two, but you're not desperate. I would agree. You know, we'll see what happens with the pitching because you do have so much talent coming back with, like you said, the freshmen they've signed. You know, I would think if there's a big fish in the portal, at, you know, like a Kelly Maxwell or a Starocco or, you know, one of those types that they've done before, what they tried to do with Berzon, I would think you try to do that again. Well, we'll see, you know, and, you know, something that I think probably, you know, I certainly was guilty of not giving it the level of attention that it probably needed was the fact that Nelly Macromarinas was out throughout this course this year. You know, they didn't have a captain this year, which, you know, Patty mentioned back way back at the media day back in February, you know, and that got a little attention at the time. Like, that's kind of odd. You know, they usually have a captain or two. And they decided not to have one this year. And it just kind of, you know, it's an easy thing to point to. But when you're in a weekend like they just had, you can't help but kind of wonder, like, who are the leaders? You know, who is everyone turning to? Who's rallying the troops in the dugout for this team? And I thought they were missing that a little bit. And I feel like Nelly Macromarinas was that. It's hard to do when you're hurt, though, and you're not playing, you know. And so I don't know how you address that in an offseason, but, like, you kind of – that would be something that I think hurt them this year. And I don't know how you address that per se, but they need some veteran players to kind of step up. But I think Kendall Walls could do that. But she's a freshman, you know, this year. Like, that's a lot to ask. So we'll see. That's another thing that they're going to need more of next year is some veteran leadership. I thought that hurt them, especially at a game like yesterday where it felt like they were just pressing and panicking the whole game offensively.
Yeah, it felt like Abby Dayton was probably that player that kind of emerged after – Nelly went down. It's like she was kind of the voice on the field. And you really saw it anytime she would draw a walk or something, even when she's hitting in that 7, 8, 9 hole. It's like nobody gets more fired up to draw a walk than Abby Dayton.
Trying to get everyone going. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we saw some of that vocalness from Kendall Wells. I think it might have been like the second inning, maybe. There was a stoppage in play, and she kind of climbed the railing of the dugout and just trying to fire up the crowd. So, like, maybe that's something that she can kind of harness and build on. I would expect Ella Parker to be more of a leader on this team next year. You know, maybe her and Gabby Garcia is kind of like the veteran presences in that lineup that can provide a little bit more of a voice. But I agree with you. Like, it just seemed like they didn't have like a go-to leader that they can just lean on when needed.
Overarching for me, though, to kind of wrap it up, they're going to be fine. They're going to be right back in the top five the preseason poll next year, I would assume, and fully expecting to get back. And this is a rare thing that they get to have that they have not had in a very long time, which is they get to come in with a little bit of an edge next year in that, you know, this was not the ending they anticipated at all. And, you know, Ella Parker post game yesterday, and the press conference is on YouTube if you want to see it. You could tell there was a little bit of like, we're going to use this. You know, this is going to be fuel all off season because this sucks. You know, that's my word, not hers. To have it come up short like that at home, just, you know, stunning. I mean, the program hadn't missed the Women's Caldwell Series in over a decade. So it's not a spot they're used to being in, but you got to imagine they're going to hit the off season really hard and they will be as motivated as possible to get this thing righted for next year. So
yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I think it's one thing to like fall short in Oklahoma City, like in that format, you know, double elimination. I think it's a whole another animal to see a fellow SEC team celebrating on your home field. And I think that's kind of an image that's going to stick with a lot of those players throughout the offseason, the ones that are coming back. So we'll see how it goes.
For sure. And we'll obviously keep an eye on the portal now. You know, Women's College World Series starts this week. So after that's over, portal open. And there will be, you know, I'm sure Oklahoma in on some big fish. We'll see if any OU players leave. Obviously, that's obviously certainly a possibility. And we'll, I'm sure, touch on it here on the show as needed, you know, here and there. And we'll have the coverage as soon as illustrated as well. So be sure to subscribe, be with us, you know, throughout the next month or so as the portal starts to wind. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break. Let's go over to baseball. NCAA tournament starts this week for Oklahoma. They got their draw today. The story is over on Sooners Illustrated, but if you haven't seen it, rough draw. I mean, it's just the way it is. This is the one thing you hope to avoid, which was going to Atlanta, which is the regional hosted by number 2 Georgia Tech. They're going to play the Citadel in their first round game on Friday. It's going to be a 4:00 first pitch Friday afternoon in Atlanta. University of Illinois Chicago rounds out the group as well, if you're curious on that. You know, this would have been a tough – this is a tough draw for anyone, right? Georgia Tech is really good. They're considered one of the favorites. They're number two for a reason. They score runs at an ungodly rate. They just mash. The ACC tournament this weekend in Charlotte, I mean, you look at the scores. I caught, you know, a decent chunk of the games. They're scoring double digits every game. They put 16 up one day. They scored 13 yesterday in the ACC championship game to beat North Carolina, who's also a top five team. They can just mash and put the ball out of the ballpark as good as anyone. And what have we been talking about with OU for the last month? They've struggled to keep teams in the ballpark, and they've been giving up a lot of runs. So obviously, just removing the fact that Georgia Tech is really good and would have been tough for anyone, they're also kind of a bad matchup, frankly, on paper. Now, it's baseball. It can be very random. Crazy things happen. But definitely not the draw you were hoping for. This is where the system is kind of broken in some ways. Oklahoma was kind of hurt. I mean, not kind of. They were. They were hurt by the fact that they were seeded up. You know, they were a two seed in their regional. If they had fallen to the three line, they'd probably get a more favorable matchup. So they kind of end up getting hurt by being a better seed, because once you land 29-32, you have to go somewhere in the top four, and that only leaves a couple of options, and Georgia Tech is where they land. So not the best situation, but if you're Oklahoma, you know, clean slate. We're supposed to talk to Skip and the team later this week. I'm not sure when that is. Keep an eye out for coverage, obviously, as soon as it's illustrated, probably on the YouTube as well. But, you know, I'm curious to kind of get their thoughts on the matchup. And the one thing Oklahoma will have going for them here is that nobody's going to pick them nationally. They're going to get no respect. Georgia Tech is one of the title favorites. And so they're going to be given little to no chance in this thing around the country. And so you get to have that both from like the pressure is kind of off, but also you get the chip on your shoulder type of thing. But definitely not the draw you're hoping for. You're hoping to maybe get lucky and land somewhere further down the seed line, but instead they're going to go to Atlanta and take on a Georgia Tech team that's playing as well as anyone right now. So kind of a scary proposition, obviously, for OU.
Yeah, definitely a difficult draw. Like you said, not only is Georgia Tech one of the best teams in the country, but what they excel at is what has given Oklahoma difficulty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one way or another, you're going to have to go through Georgia Tech to get out of that regional. So they've got their work cut out for them this week.
Yeah, and I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about the Citadel. We'll have more throughout the week as I'll kind of dive into them and what kind of year they had. I know earlier in the year against some SEC competition, it didn't go overly well for the Citadel. Now, it's a good program. They're in the tournament pretty regularly, obviously a mid-major. So we'll see, you know, what that looks like. The way I've kind of, you know, we're talking about this in passing the last few weeks, I presume Cam Johnson will get the ball on Friday. That's just my guess. That's not official. That's just what I would assume would happen. If Cam can give them a good outing and he can go 5-6 innings, and obviously you have to win on Friday, they have at least an outside shot to do something. But if it's one of these outings where he can't get through the third and he's chased early and they're trying to play catch up all weekend, it's going to be really tough. Tough sledding from there. So you don't want to put too much on one guy. Like it's up to you. But that's kind of just the reality of the situation for Oklahoma. I'm very curious to see how Skip Johnson lines up the pitching. You know, because this is where it's a tricky spot where you can't get ahead of yourself. But it's like, do you consider throwing a Xander Mercurius or something to try and see if you can beat the Citadel without Cam Johnson and throw him against Georgia Tech? That's a gamble. But maybe it's worth it to try and get, you know, have a better shot. These are questions that will have to be sorted out over the course of the week. But yeah, we'll see. Obviously, again, coverage over on Sooners Illustrated. We'll have more throughout the week as we talk to the team. I'll continue to kind of set the table for this weekend. But 4 o'clock start, Oklahoma and the Citadel on Friday. Georgia Tech's actually going to go first on Friday. So they play at 11 a.m., one of the first games of the weekend on Friday. And OU will take the field after out there in Atlanta. So we'll see. I will also add, too, the one nice thing with being number two, playing the number two, you're lined up with number 15, which is Kansas. So, you know, in a dream world where you find a way to pull off the upset and get through this regional, you should have a relatively manageable super opponent and somewhere that's pretty close. I mean, if it's in Lawrence, just about 4 hours up the road, you know, OU fans could definitely get there. Arkansas is also in that regional, so Fayetteville is even closer. I mean, again, you're getting way ahead looking at supers when you got to go to take on number two team in America. But if you could get there somehow, you got a pretty decent shot at Omaha, obviously. So we'll see. One game at a time. Citadel first up on Friday. We'll have the coverage over on Sooners Illustrated. All right, before we get out of here, I think we're going to talk golf for the first time in the history of the Sooners Illustrated podcast. big news over the weekend. I thought like we had to touch on it. We don't really cover golf obviously much or talk a lot of golf certainly on this program, but Ryan Hibble stepping down 17 years as the head coach at OU, obviously won a national title, and he's going to leave the program. He's going to take over at, coincidentally, Georgia Tech, after we're just talking about that with baseball. Tom, I mean, he's from Georgia. Obviously, his brother Nate, quarterback at OU back in the early 2000s, that's where they're from out there is Georgia, closer to home.
But his wife is from there too.
It just kind of made sense family-wise. My understanding, it's not a money thing. I know that was a lot of conversation about that. From what I've been told, nothing to do with money. OU was willing to kind of pony up to try and keep him around. But, you know, he wants to get closer to home. And this is a big news, obviously, for OU golf. Ryan Hibble, you know, golf is never going to be the flashiest sport in terms of, like, it's not going to be the first one that comes to mind for, like, best coaches. But as far as if you were to power rank all the coaches at OU, Ryan Hibble pretty high. I mean, top, you know, few. He's up there with Patty Gasso and KJ Kindler, certainly. Like, he's in that mix up there. And so big news to lose him. And you hate it for OU golf. Obviously, again, I think it's a good terms deal. I think everyone kind of understands what the situation is here. But obviously big news for that program is they lose one of the best coaches in America in Ryan Hibble.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, he won a national title less than a decade ago. Has really built up Oklahoma. The draw of, you know, getting back home, getting closer to family is powerful, especially when you've already dedicated, you know, so much time to one program, and you feel like you've, you know, accomplished a lot, but, you know, have an opportunity to kind of build another program closer to home. And it's interesting because, you know, he went to Georgia. So now he's coaching at Georgia
Tech. And their coach was retired.
Yeah.
So there's some thought he might get the gig there, and he didn't.
And he didn't. So, yeah. So you got to wonder if, like, maybe that played a factor in it too, as a little just like, wow, you like the alma mater kind of passed over him. And then one of their biggest rivals came open, and like you have your opportunity to kind of stick it to them now. Just interesting timing. Obviously, he's still going to be coaching in the tournament next week. So we'll see how that goes. One last ride for him before he heads east to Atlanta.
Yeah, he is going to finish the season, like you said. They do. I mean, they have a good team this year. They have another shot to try and maybe win another national title, which would be quite a way to go out if that's the way it shakes out. So we'll see what happens. They are keeping it in-house. They already announced that Jonathan Moore, who is the associate head coach, is going to take over. So they're going to keep it in-house. They're not doing some big search. They already just went boom, boom, announced who's going to be taking over. You know, all the – OU golf alums, you know, your Chris Goderups, your Brad Dahlkes, these guys who, you know, are well-known on the tour level, obviously professional level, would go to bat and speak the world of Ryan Hibble, both the guy and the coach. So big blow, obviously. And again, it's not a – I think it's a good terms thing. I think OU gets it. They try to keep him. They understand. But it doesn't make it any less of a, you know, a bit of a gut punch to lose a guy who's really good. So we'll see where he goes from here.
Yeah, and just to, you know, kind of tie it all together, obviously, you know, Ryan Hibble going to his alma mater's in-state rival, and now Oklahoma's promoting Jonathan Moore, who, you know, won an individual NCAA championship in 2006 at Oklahoma State. So he's taken over at Oklahoma as the head coach now after, you know, being on staff the last 3 years. So kind of interesting how it all works out. But should be interesting to see, you know, how they fare in this little swan song they have before Ryan Hibble takes over at Georgia Tech. And, you know, they get a chance to kick off the Jonathan Moore era after that.
Yep, no doubt. All right, I think that's it. Colin Kennedy should be back after a couple weeks off later this week. We'll catch up on some recruiting stuff. Obviously, as we get into OV season coming up this weekend, I talked about that a little bit with Brody Lusk last week. Some big visitors on the way for OU football coming up obviously the next couple of weekends. Kind of set the table for that a little bit with Colin later this week. Tom and I will circle back next Monday, which will be the first show of June, which we're getting into the dog days starting next Monday. Spring meetings are going on this week, though, in Destin, SEC spring meetings. Probably have some content coming from there. Brent Venables, Roger Denny, I think some the basketball coach out there as well. So maybe some things to get into there for Tom and I next Monday. But Obviously, we'll figure that out between now and then. But we'll be back. Colin on Thursday, Tom on next Monday. That's it for now. Again, baseball coverage to come throughout the week, getting ready for the NCAA tournament. We'll see you on Thursday with Colin. Tom and I back next Monday. That's it for now. See you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.